for jewelry and their personal papers, insurance policies, and so on, would probably be okay. The safe hidden at the back of the upstairs closet was supposed to be fireproof. But the Turkish rugs would be ash. The 1,000 or so videotapes, melted lumps of plastic. The audio-visual equipment, his clothes, their photographs, thousands of them. Good Christ. And the first thing he thought of was that goddamn magazine. No, Amy was saying, answering the question he had almost forgotten asking in his realization of how enormous the personal loss must be. She couldn't tell what kind of car it was. She said she thought somebody must have used a Molotov cocktail or something like that, because of the way the fire came up in the window right after the sound of breaking glass. She said she started up the driveway, and then the kitchen door opened, and a man ran out. Bruno started to bark at him, but Patty got scared and pulled him back, although she said he just about ripped the leash out of her hand. Then the man got into the car and started it up. He turned on the headlights, and Patty said they almost blinded her. She threw her arm up to shield her eyes, and the car just roared out from under the portico. That's what she said. And she squeezed back against our front fence and pulled Bruno as hard as she could, or the man would have hit him. Then he turned out of the driveway and drove down the street fast. And she never saw what kind of car it was. No. First it was dark, and then when the fire started to shine through your study window, the headlights dazzled her. She ran back to the house and called the fire department. Isabel said they came fast, but you know how old our house was, and how fast dry wood burns, especially if you use gasoline. Yes. He knew. Old, dry, full of wood, the house had been an arsonist wet dream. But who? If not Shooter, who? This terrible news, coming on top of the day's events like a hideous dessert at the end of a loathsome meal, had almost completely paralyzed his ability to think. He said it was probably gasoline, the fire chief, I mean. He was there first, but then the police came and they kept asking questions, Mort, mostly about you, about any enemies you might have made. Enemies? And I said I didn't think you had any enemies. I tried to answer all his questions. I'm sure you did the best job you could, he said gently. She went on as if she hadn't heard him, speaking in breathless ellipses, like a telegraph operator relating dire news aloud just as it spills off the wire. I didn't even know how to tell them we were divorced. And of course they didn't know. It was Ted who had to tell them finally. Mort, my mother's Bible. It was on the nightstand in the bedroom. There were pictures in it of my family, and it was the only thing of hers I had. Her voice dissolved into miserable sobs. I'll be up in the morning, he said. If I leave at 7, I can be there by 9:30. Maybe by 9, now that there's no summer traffic. Where will you stay tonight? At Ted's? Yes, she said, sniffling. I know you don't like him, Mort, but I don't know what I would have done without him tonight. How I could have handled it, you know, all their questions. Then I'm glad you had him, he said firmly. He found the calmness, the civilization, in his voice really astounding. Take care of yourself. Have you got your pills? She'd had a tranquilizer prescription for the last 6 years of their marriage, but only took them when she had to fly, or, he remembered, when he had some public function to fulfill, one which required the presence of the designated spouse. They were in the medicine cabinet, she said dully. It doesn't matter. I'm not stressed, just heartsick. Mort almost told her he believed they were the same thing and decided not to. I'll be there as soon as I can, he said. If you think I could do something by coming tonight. No, she said. Where should we meet, Ted? Suddenly, unbidden, he saw his hand holding a chambermaid's passkey, saw it turning in the lock of a motel room door, saw the door swinging open, saw the surprised faces above the sheet, Amy's on the left, Ted Milner's on the right. His blow-dried look had been knocked all aslant and asprawl by sleep, and to Mort he had looked a little bit like Alfalfa in the old Little Rascal short subjects. Seeing Ted's hair in sleep corkscrews like that had also made the man look really real to Mort for the first time. He had seen their dismay and their bare shoulders, and suddenly, almost randomly, he thought, a woman who would steal your love when your love was really all you had. No, he said, not Ted's. What about that little coffee shop on Wycham Street? Would you prefer I came alone? She didn't sound angry, but she sounded ready to be angry. How well I know her, he thought. Every move, every lift and drop of her voice, every turn of phrase. And how well she must know me. No, he said. Bring Ted. That'd be fine. Not fine, but he could live with it, he thought. 9:30 then, she said, and he could hear her standing down a little. Marchman's. Is that the name of the place?
Yes.
Marchman's Restaurant. Okay, 9:30 or a little earlier. If I get there first, I'll chalk a mark on the door. And if I get there first, I'll rub it out. And she finished the old catechism. And they both laughed a little. Mort found that even the laugh hurt. They knew each other all right. Wasn't that what the years together were supposed to be for? Wasn't that why it hurt so goddamn bad when you discovered that not only could the years end, they really had? He suddenly thought of the note which had been stuck under one of the garbage cabinet shake shingles. Remember, you have 3 days. I am not joking. He thought of saying, I've had a little trouble of my own down here, Amy. And then he knew he couldn't add that to her current load of woe. It was his trouble. If it had happened later, at least you would have saved your stuff, she was saying. I don't like to think about all the manuscripts you must have lost, Mort. If you'd gotten the fireproof drawers 2 years ago when Herb suggested them, maybe... I don't think it matters, Mort said. I've got the manuscript of the new novel down here. He did, too. All 14 shitty wooden pages of it. To hell with the rest. I'll see you tomorrow, Amy. I love you. He closed his lips over it. They were divorced. Could he still love her? It seemed almost perverse. And even if he did he have any right to say so? I'm sorry as hell about this, he told her instead. So am I, Mort. So very sorry. She was starting to cry again. Now he could hear someone, a woman, probably Isabel Fortin, comforting her. Get some sleep, Amy. You too. He hung up. All at once, the house seemed much quieter than it had on any of the other nights he had been here alone. He could hear nothing but the night wind whispering around the eaves, and very far off a loon calling on the lake. He took the note out of his pocket, smoothed it out, and read it again. It was the sort of thing you were supposed to put aside for the police. In fact, it was the sort of thing you weren't even supposed to touch until the police had had a chance to photograph it and work their juju on it. It was... Ruffle of drums and blast of trumpets, please. Evidence. Well, fuck it, Mort thought, crumpling it up again. No police. Dave Newsom, the local constable, probably had trouble remembering what he'd eaten for breakfast by the time lunch rolled around. And he couldn't see taking the matter to either the county sheriff or the state police. After all, it wasn't as though an attempt had been made on his life. His cat had been killed. But a cat wasn't a person. And in the wake of Amy's devastating news, John Shooter simply didn't seem as important anymore. He was one of the crazy folks. He had a bee in his bonnet, and he might be dangerous. But Mort felt more and more inclined to try and handle the business himself, even if Shooter was dangerous, especially if he was dangerous. The house in Derry took precedence over John Shooter and John Shooter's crazy ideas. It even took precedence over who had done the deed, Shooter or some other fruitcake with a grudge, a mental problem, or both. The house, and, he supposed, Amy. She was clearly in bad shape, and it couldn't hurt either of them for him to offer her what comfort he could. Maybe she would even... But he closed his mind to any speculation about what Amy might even do. He saw nothing but pain down that road. Better to believe that road was closed for good. He went into the bedroom, undressed, and lay down with his hands behind his head. The loon called again, desperate and distant. It occurred to him again that Shooter could be out there, creeping around, his face a pale circle beneath his odd black hat. Shooter was nuts, and although he had used his hands and a screwdriver on Bump, that did not preclude the possibility that he still might have a gun. But Mort didn't think Shooter was out there, armed or not. Calls, he thought. I'll have to make at least two on my way up to Derry, one to Greg Carstairs and one to Herb Creekmore. Too early to make them from here if I leave at 7, but I could use one of the payphones at the Augusta toll booth. He turned over on his side, thinking it would be a long time before he fell asleep tonight after all. And then sleep rolled over him in a smooth, dark wave. And if anyone came to peer in on him as he slept, he did not know it. The alarm got him up at 6:15. He took half an hour to bury Bump in the sandy patch of ground between the house and the lake, and by 7 he was rolling just as planned. He was 10 miles down the road and heading into Mechanic Falls, a bustling metropolis which consisted of a textile mill that had closed in 1970, 5,000 souls, and a yellow blinker at the intersection of Routes 23 and 7, when he noticed that his old Buick was running on fumes. He pulled into Bill's Chevron, cursing himself for not having checked the gauge before setting out. If he had gotten through Mechanic Falls without noticing how low the gauge had fallen, he might have had a pretty good walk for himself and ended up very late for his appointment with Amy. He went to the payphone in the wall while a pump jockey tried to fill the Buick's bottomless pit. He dug his battered address book out of his left rear pocket and dialed Greg Carsair's number. He thought he might actually catch Greg in this early, and he was right. "Hello? Hi, Greg. Mort Rainey." "Hi, Mort. I guess you got some trouble up in Derry, huh?" "Yes," Mort said. "Was it on the news?" "Channel 5. How did it look?" "How did what look?" Greg replied. Mort winced.